Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians, hello, global citizens, and hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend Damian Galvin created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
One, and we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and one of my best friends, Damian Galvin, created in our junior years of high school to deconstruct issues of the past and present to create a more equitable future for all. Now, today we have a very, very broad-reaching discussion on the future of our nation and the election coming up this November. And it's a kind of a solo episode with me and Damian just talking about issues that we think are most important for our viewers to hear and things that we're very passionate about. So without further ado, I guess we can begin today, Damian.
Yeah, for sure. So I think a little bit of housekeeping, you know, we're human here on the podcast. So we got to give you guys a little bit of a peek behind the curtain. We're going to change our schedule to Mondays and Fridays at 7 p.m. It's just going to work easier with school, as you guys know. And as Varun mentioned, we're juniors. So, you know, this is the year where a lot of you can relate to just being loaded on homework and after school activities and joining different clubs. And we have the podcast, but the podcast, I think, has slipped to the back of our minds. And now if we have them on Monday and Wednesday, I think it's going to be a lot easier for us to keep you guys in the loop about what we're thinking. I'm excited, honestly, to do a little bit of the solo episodes. I don't know if you are. Like, I enjoy kind of that aspect, too, of just being able to talk to you. It's great learning, but sometimes there's so much that happens during the week that you just feel like you have to get off your chest. And that's really what I love about the podcast.
Absolutely. It gives us both an opportunity to speak to just America and speak to people who want to listen to us. I think solo episodes are good, Damien. I like speaking to you, to our viewers, about things that I'm passionate about, because I think that this week has been very, very, very unnerving. I'm sure you can relate. It's been very, very, I guess, a point of passion. I've been in North Carolina this entire, I guess, the past couple of days, Saturday to today. And what I've experienced for the first time in my life is I've seen people's political beliefs on their face. And I'm saying that because a person without a mask on shows me that they're ignorant and that they're following in Trump's propaganda, the conservative propaganda. And for the first time in my life, I have seen that without having to dig deeper. It's so apparent in today's world. And it's just, I just realized that today and I was like, I got to bring this in. I got to talk about it today. And it's unnerving and it's weird because, I mean, when you're going around looking at people without a mask on, it's almost like I'm scared because it creates a sense of fear within me. And it's just, I don't think in today's scope, it is okay. It was the first time I've really been out of the state since the pandemic, barring this summer where I was in Chicago. But it really did open me up to the true nature of our country as being so divided upon partisan lines to where we can't even decide upon the most simple of safety precautions in our nation. And it brings me back to the point that we can see your political party, your political standpoint, but more importantly, your sense of empathy on your face.
Yeah, I think that it's beyond I think face masks are beyond politics, to be honest. Like, even though they have a political alignment, right? Like, the idea that Republicans don't wear masks and, like, Democrats do. I think that it goes beyond that. I think it transcends it a little bit. I think most good Republicans will still wear masks. I think that really it is a point of ignorance. And this week has been so frustrating on so many different fronts. But we are a podcast that talks about socio-political issues. So I think I want to focus a little bit on some socio before we hop into the heavy hitting stuff. I mean, how have you been, Varun? I actually just wanted to bring this up because I thought that this was pretty cool. I don't know if you know who David Blaine is.
Let me know who he is.
Well, David Blaine, he's kind of like Houdini. Like a street performer and stuff. He like was buried alive for a week and he stood in ice for 70 hours, something like that. He stayed awake for like extremely long amounts of times, held his breath for like 20 minutes. He's done some pretty crazy stuff. But this past week, I think it was September 2nd, this has absolutely nothing to do with politics for all our listeners, by the way. It's just something that I thought was cool and something that, you know, I wanted to bring on before we dive into some of the heavy stuff. But he got lifted up into 24,900 feet in the air by a couple of balloons. And I thought that that was just crazy. That was cool. I heard of it on the Joe Rogan podcast. Obviously, you know, we're podcasters. We listen to different podcasts and we kind of shape even our podcast off of that podcast. But it was really cool to actually see it happen. He went up to 24,000 feet and put his parachute on in midair. It was really cool. It was really cool to watch. And it's something that kind of distracted us from what would occur later in the week with, you know, the piece that came out about the president's rhetoric towards veterans and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this weekend's been pretty revealing to me too.
Happy Labor Day, by the way.
Oh yeah. Happy Labor Day. All of our viewers, to you, Damien, all of our working class Americans, happy Labor Day. That's very important, for Politi and for us. But in terms of my weekend, I think I've watched a lot of podcasts being on the road. I was driving, for the most part, over to the mountains this weekend. Mm-hmm. So a good getaway, but a lot of podcasting. I've been listening to podcasts around psychology. Obviously, one of my favorites, Pod Saves America. I've been listening to that one. Washington Week, Pod Saves the People. A lot of good podcasts to bring you guys more content, more perspectives, and more opinions. So that's, I guess, where I gain the most information for the podcast. It's off of people's perspectives, and that's where I learn the most. It's about really listening to those perspectives and bring them to you guys as viewers. But without further ado, I think we should, first of all, I think we should begin on a point that you mentioned earlier, Damien. It's the point that the president has used very, very derogatory rhetoric towards veterans, and that's been revealed, I think, strategically by the Biden campaign, not by the Biden campaign, but by people, his past generals. But go ahead if you want to explain that more in detail, Damien.
Yeah, sure. Sorry, I'm drinking a protein shake while recording this. I've been getting back into better habits as we're kind of here fixing our podcast schedule. I got to fix my sleep schedule and stuff, but to stay on topic, I mean, to be fair, he's denied it. I mean, who wouldn't deny it? I think that it's, you know, at this point, it's odd because, you know, you're always supposed to give people the benefit of the doubt. And I do so over and over again with the president. But this is what I think, right? And hear me out. If a story like this would have come out with Obama, people would have just been like, it's not true, right? If a story like this would have come out with Joe Biden, people would have just been like, it's not true. It wouldn't have gained any traction. But the fact that this story can even have some sort of validity shows us like the climate that our country is in, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Now, I think that when you're talking about this instance, it's not unprecedented. Because if you think about what he said about John McCain, he has called John McCain not an American hero.
That's what I'm saying.
He has been caught. So the fact that this is precedented, you can kind of build the backbone for these statements early on in his career, talking about things he said about the military, talking about John McCain, talking about, I guess, a loser's funeral, as he mentioned it. Really, you can find where he led up to it. An effing loser. That we don't know completely, but we know Trump called him because he was caught. Now, the worst thing is that Trump wouldn't even put his name into the draft. He basically got out of the American draft for war because of his family status. Himself and his family were out of the draft. So what does that say about being patriotic? The fact that you call American warrior hero, a POW who suffered torture at the hands of our enemies for this nation, for freedom, and for peace, a loser. It says a lot because you never put your name into the draft. It says a lot to fight for your nation. I don't think Trump's ever fought for his nation. As president, you can say what you want. But I, in my personal being, do not believe that Trump has ever fought for our nation in any capacity.
Yeah, he's fought for himself. I think something that was funny, obviously I'm happy to see that everyone's okay. And a lot of people thought that I'd be pissed. Here locally, there was a couple of like boat rallies. I think it's called Boaters for Trump or something. There was a couple in Dallas.
The great American boat rally.
That's what it was called. And there was, I think there was one in Dallas where 5 boats sank. And I was reading a news story on it, and one of the comments on the article said, "I like boats that don't sink. These are some suckers and losers." And obviously, it's funny because everyone's okay. And I'm glad that everyone's okay, but it was like, it was just such a twist on the rhetoric that Trump's been spreading. And then it's funny to see people get mad at that person and then be like, if you understand the context of the joke where he says, The Bush was a loser because he got caught, right? Like, yeah. No, like, his soldiers died. He was one of the only soldiers. I think 8-9 planes went down with him, and he was one of the, I think he was the only soldier that made it out, right? Here you're making a joke about, you know, a couple boats sinking and some idiots, frankly, that didn't have life jackets on that are lucky to have made it out. But beyond the point, something that really pissed me off, and you know, we're talking a little bit about social media here because I said that I saw that article, but it was an article posted on an Instagram page. And something that I posted, kind of just trying to transition here, onto my Snapchat was, the president and his staff are inhumane. The president and his staff are inhumane. And this post came after I saw a tweet from one of his highest staffers making fun of Joe Biden for visiting his son's grave. And I just can't comprehend that, right? Like, okay, attack the man on his mental capacity, still not about politics. Attack the man on this or that. Keep it political. But when you're saying that he's, I don't remember the word. He was like maundering around the grave, saying that he was basically meandering. That's what it was. Meandering along the grave. It's such a point of disrespect, right? No one said anything about the president's brother. No one said anything, you know. Why bring it to that point? Why bring it, and why not take down the tweet if you realize that it was insensitive? What pisses me off the most is that they try to explain the tweet afterwards. They know what they did. Just take it down, right? Be a real person. Be, you know, have empathy. At the end of the day, sure, we can be going through some political turmoil, but I think the state of the union is broken. And it's broken in the sense that we've lost so much respect for each other that we can't even have a father mourn at his son's gravesite without the president's staff, the president of the United States, the president of the free world, his staff, the people he hires, making fun of him. And that hit the wrong spot with me. First of all, it's not just his son, right? It's not just his son. He's a hero to all of us because he fought in Afghanistan. You know, he could be visiting some random person's gravesite. It's disrespectful, period, to make comments like that. It's disrespectful, period, to make comments about a father visiting. You know, a deceased veteran's gravesite, and it's most disrespectful to just be, it's just the rhetoric. Like, I can't understand, you know how fast that person would have been fired in any other administration, whether it's Bush, Reagan, Obama, no matter the administration, that person would have been relieved of their duties immediately. That's not political. That's un-American. That's unpatriotic. And frankly, I'd call it, I don't want to get upset about it, but it's not because it's Joe Biden. If someone would have done that to Donald Trump, it would have upset me. We don't need to, that's such a low blow, and it just, low blows piss me off.
Yeah, and I think that you have to mention Bo, as Bo the soldier, Bo the Biden, and more importantly, Bo the American hero. And you have to consider that whenever you say something. Now, the context behind this story was that the reporter in the video was saying, "Mr. Vice President, come talk to him." And Joe Biden, he waved his hand and walked away. And the issue with this whole situation is the fact that Joe Biden's at a cemetery, clearly visiting his son's grave, his dead son's grave. Bo Biden, again, the American hero. And this is not unprecedented, Damien. Once again, going back to the idea that things like these are not unprecedented, back in July, an RNC spokesman posted a picture of Joe Biden and his son, Bo Biden, once again, as he was a kid, in a Redskins hat, saying, "Hey, Joe Biden, are you still a Redskins fan?" Because of the whole controversy around the name. Now, again,
but there was an implication under that. If you felt it, did you feel the undertone under that? Absolutely. Because it was like, "Are you still a Redskins fan, knowing your son's dead in that hat?"
I saw the more of an undertone in that one. I did, and this one. Both of them are just terrible instances. I think you have to mention the fact that campaigns in the past, like you said, have been run on empathy. That's why John McCain, when he selected Sarah Palin as vice president, he didn't feel that it was right in the Republican Party, because he was seeing so much hatred towards Obama as an Arab, as a terrorist. Things like these were being said in the Republican Party, and he felt bad about it. He wanted to run a good campaign. Steve Schmidt, John McCain, these were good people wanting to run a good campaign. And that's why, if you think about it, John McCain, the woman who said, I'm scared of Obama. Obama's an Arab. He's like, no, Obama's a good family man. Obama's a good American citizen. He wanted to run a campaign that prided the American values, prided American empathy, and just only emphasized a small difference in their policies. He didn't want to shoot low blows like that. That was the real issue. I think right now we're shooting low blows every single day. And when you're shooting a blow as low as to disrespect an American hero, disrespect the vice president's son, and disrespect everything about that is just messed up. I can't comprehend just why he said it and why the person isn't fired, because the firing privilege is in one person's hand, and that's Donald Trump. If Donald Trump, as Mike Cohen said in his book, and he has pictures to prove this, hired an Obama impersonator to yell at and to fire and to constantly throw jabs at, he could fire a guy who disrespected the vice president, an American hero. He can't. It's in his hands. So I don't know if you read Mike Cohen's book, but that was disturbing by any measure. I want to pivot back to that. The fact that he hired, there's pictures of this, actually, of him and the Obama impersonator in the White House. And he hired him to yell at him and to fire him because of how much hatred he had towards the president. But more than that, I think it is a deep-rooted sense of that he couldn't stand up to the privilege, to the standard that Obama put forth as a standard bearer. I think he was just upset by that and wanted to lash out at somebody. And that's just a sign of a narcissist, a sign of a person who's mentally unstable. It's something that I think we should talk about, consider. But before we do it, I want to also go back to your point on the boats. And I think it's funny, Damien. I think it's funny because I saw the same tweet on my Twitter page, and I retweeted it on Politity. It said, I prefer boats that don't sink. USS John S. McCain. Take that as you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the reason that he'll never be able to live up to the Obama administration, and the reason that he'll never be able to live up to the Reagan administration, say what you will about Reagan, right? People still love him. The reason he'll never live up to the Bush, and the reason that he's never going to live up to the administration that precedes him, which hopefully, you know, if you go out this November and vote, it's going to be the Biden administration, right? A new poll came out, Biden's leading by 10%. And you want to know why? It's because right now America needs a man, not a boy, right? They don't need a little boy in the Oval Office. And I keep saying it over and over again, because a little boy only does the things that the so-called president of the United States is doing right now, right? You know, I never agreed with the thing, not my president. I never agreed with it because, frankly, he is my president, right? He's the president of the United States. And for that, I can hold a certain level of respect towards him, right? There's things that I want to say about Donald Trump, right? But I even have to hold myself back, because at the end of the day, he is a father, right? He's a father. He's a son. I can hold some sort of empathy, some sort of compassion towards him, right? But it becomes so difficult when you see that person can't do the same. And I'm not a very religious person, but it only leaves one option, and that's to pray for them, right? I mean, you talk about getting the Anglo-Saxon vote or whatever, you know, the religious, the Christian vote. I think that the Christian vote's kind of switching towards Biden's side. And I think that, frankly, this administration needs a lot of prayer. And it just hurts me to see that someone can be so small, right? Someone can be so small as to make remarks such as the ones that the president has made. And I'm not just talking about the ones that are alleged. I'm talking about the ones that are just on record, right? Sure, we can talk about the ones that are alleged remarks that he made behind closed doors. But what about we just talk about the ones that he says at his rallies? What about we just talk about the ones that he has on Twitter? Why don't we talk about the ones that he has recorded? What about, you know, grabbing by the pussy, right? That's what about making fun of an autistic reporter? What about making fun of John McCain? We don't need to focus on the ones that are behind closed doors. We don't need to defend them. Sure, he can deny them, but what's he going to do about those? Is it just locker room talk when you're disrespecting a dead soldier? Is it just locker room talk when you have kids in cages at the border wall? Is it just locker room talk when you can't say that what Kyle Rittenhouse did was wrong?
Yeah, there's no vindication for it, Damien. I think it is strategic, though, because these racial undertones have been in America for so long, in our nation for so long, and I think Trump is playing upon these undertones to power forth his campaign. I think it is very strategic because America, I don't believe in what Nikki Haley said. I don't believe in it. I think America has been racist systematically, and I think America is racist. I think it is. Because the fact that a person is in our office who supports, who doesn't go against white supremacists, and by doing so is complicit in their actions, just disturbs me and shows me that America, in its heart, in its roots, is still a racist nation. The fact that we have somebody, I keep mentioning it, silence is complicity. The fact that Trump is silent about these instances, and not even silent about Kyle Rittenhouse, he's advocating for Kyle Rittenhouse in his press conferences, means he is complicit by any measure.
I want to counter that. I want to counter that. America is not inherently racist. America is inherently silent. America inherently does not show up to the voting booth, right? 52% of Americans are going to vote. What happens to the other 48%? Right? That's what America is. America does not voice our opinions. As Americans, it is our obligation. And we're going to see this November, as Americans show up to the polls, after the events took place with the I've had family members, as I'm sure most of listeners of the podcast, I've had family members, you know, serve in the military. You know, I've had family members that you don't know if they're going to come back home. I've had family members on both sides of it. I've had family members in Mexico deported, and I've also had them sent to Afghanistan. And to know that you can have such disrespect for people, and I'm not just talking about the ones that are behind closed doors. I'm talking about just up front. I think that when America's voice is heard and when Americans really voice their opinions, we can see that America is not inherently racist. But the problem is when American voices are suppressed. And I think that this November, I'm seeing it every single day. Vote, 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 vote. And vote. If Americans vote, we will prosper as a nation. If Americans vote, the ideology that we want to pursue as the best country, the greatest country in the world, will prosper. When Americans vote, the proper opinions get heard and the proper decisions get made. So if you choose not to vote, I do not want to hear you complaining about the State of the Union. And if you can't vote and you chose to stay at home doing who knows what, spending time doing who knows what, and not voicing your opinion in some way, helping in some way, bringing a discussion in some way, then you should not voice your opinion on the when the nation is down. You need to go out and you need to voice and you need to be heard and you need to frankly encourage everyone who is above 18 to vote. Because again, when that happens, that is when America is truly going to be the greatest country in the world.
It brings me back to the point that silence is complicity. Mm-hmm. Because in 2016, I didn't believe it so much, because not voting meant you were, I guess you thought Hillary was going to win either way, or you thought that was a norm that was going to stay. And I don't respect that either way. But now the risks of what can happen are so clear to where being silent is being complicit. And if America elects Trump to one more term, I will take anybody who was silent, who didn't vote, who didn't voice their opinions, as being complicit in the racism and the bigotry that is in the White House.
Even if they vote for Trump.
Even if you vote for Trump, that is a vote for racism and for bigotry. Because
what I was saying is that you need to vote for whatever, man. As long as if you go out and vote and you voice your opinion, I don't have an issue with it.
At this point in the election, I have an issue if you vote for Trump. I do, and I'll say that with a strong vindication. I have a strong, because doing so, it means you're not supporting your peers. It means you're not placing your backing behind the rest of the United States of America, your POC peers, because Trump has most blatantly come out, and now more than ever blatantly come out and gone against the values of this country. A vote for Trump is an un-American thing, I believe, at this point, because we've seen enough. In 2016, it was one thing. In 2016, even I thought when Trump got elected, maybe he will change. Maybe he would learn more about politics. It's not going to happen. We've seen it. American lives are at stake. A vote for Trump is a vote against the prosper of our nation, because 188,000 American lives have died. One of my friends, he told me, I'm voting for Trump because I'm pro-life. And I said, you're so pro-life that you're voting for a guy who allowed 188,000 Americans to die. That's how pro-life you are. Mm-hmm. And it was shocking, because he had no response. He had no response. And that's the state of the union right now. He had no response. And so I think that if we pressure people and ask them, what is in it for you, they would understand what the implications are. Steve Schmidt, for example, a big campaign staffer on John McCain's campaign, is a big anti-Trumper. Kellyanne Conway's husband is a co-founder of the Lincoln Project. These people are coming out and understanding that going against Trump is pro-democracy, pro-union, pro-POCs. It is a vote for America going forward. And I think that when you're going back to the point of Trump in 2016, they say it now. They say Trump is a celebrity and Trump isn't a politician. And that's why I love Trump, right? The issue with that is that people said the same thing about Obama. They were like, Obama's a celebrity. Obama knows how to speak to people. That's why I'm voting for him. The difference is that Obama was a constitutional law professor at U of Chicago. Obama had a background in the legal field, and Obama was a little bit more than a celebrity.
He was a man. That's the only difference.
He was a man. He was a man. And I think that right now, more than ever, America needs not only a man, but we need a politician to get us past this dark, dark, dark period in our country's history.
Yeah, and to be frank, we don't need, I say he was a man because of the idea, you know, sure, you can be a woman. I think, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. It's just the power, right? I think the better word is adult. He was an adult, to be frank, right? It's the kid in the Oval Office right now. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, you can still be a strong adult. What we need right now is a leader. And you can't have a leader when your catchphrase, right, the thing that you're known for, is something that tears people apart. You're fired, right? That's what you're known for. You can't be a leader when the only thing that you want to lead is yourself, right? You can't be a leader when defacing and tearing down Americans and their lives is what your campaign runs on. And you can't be a leader when you're playing golf and 180,000 Americans are dead. I don't think that any president, I've never agreed with this. I've never agreed with the idea of a president of the United States playing golf. You know, sure, they can
Obama,
have...
Obama did do it.
Yeah, Obama did it. Obama did. Step back here. Obama did it. And what pisses me off about the right-wing media right now is that they criticize Obama so harshly for playing golf. And they're letting Trump do it every single day. They're letting him do it when 200,000 Americans are dead. And they're letting him do it when his campaign staffer, right, at the exact same time that his campaign staffer, or that, sorry, Biden was visiting his son's grave, Trump was playing a round of golf. But I say that to say this. I think right now we need someone that will never settle, right? And someone that beyond the obstacles put in front of them, they won't give up. Filing for bankruptcy doesn't show that beyond the obstacles put up in front of you, you won't give up. It shows that, I have the money to do it, so I'm going to do it. Right, I'm just gonna do it because I want to. I can't understand right now. Right, it, playing a game when Americans are dying, and I can't understand it. Period, because there's always American suffering, and there's always some proposal, or some meeting, some idea that you can be coming up with as president of the United States. But even I think more so right now. right? 200,000 in the midst of a pandemic. Your priority is putting a ball in a hole with a stick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think you're right. A couple of points I want to make. Trump plays golf at 2 times the rate of Obama. I read this stat on a news site. It was 2 times as much as Obama on CNN's own statistics. So beyond that, what really, really made me mad was that on Twitter, as I literally saw reports of Trump playing golf at, I think, one of his resorts in the U.S., he tweeted, "I can't go boating with you," talking about the Great American Boat Rally, "because I'm fully focused on November," right? And at the same instance, literally the same time frame, Trump is saying, he's saying that he's focused on November, he's playing golf. And I think that it really shows how dishonest he is to the American people, and more so, how little he cares about American lives. Again, beyond him playing golf, as hundreds of thousands of Americans are dead, it is what it is. It is what it is. When a reporter asked him in an Axios interview, "What do you think about American lives being lost in the coronavirus pandemic?" he said, "It is what it is." It shows an utter lack of respect, and more importantly than that, he mentioned the point that Trump loves saying you're fired. Well, it shows how much of a child he is, but he can't say you're fired to his own staffer who disrespected an American hero and threw cheap shots at his opponent. I think you have to consider a man who has lived his life saying you're fired cannot say you're fired to a staffer who has done such a thing. And it really shows the kind of person that Trump is, but not to say that I didn't know about it. Like, we've known what kind of person Donald Trump is.
I don't know why we keep pretending. That irritates me, the fact that we keep pretending.
Well, pretending was seen at the RNC, more specifically. The entire conference, they were pretending Trump is some kind of god, some kind of hero. The last night of the RNC, Trump's speech was completely scripted. None of his usual blabber. He is not the kind of person that they depicted him as. And that's a simple fact of the matter. When you look at how he's speaking right now, it does not show the empathy, the compassion towards the middle class that they painted him as. I think that's not the way to go for the Republican Party, because as you keep painting him in that light, he'll keep disbanding your paintings. He's never going to live up to that, Damien. He's never going to. And I think that the more you paint him as that, the more you give the left-wing media, the media sources, things to pray apart at on, because he's not living up to your expectations, and he's never going to. I think if they want to win, they have to phrase Trump as a practical candidate, and they have to bash Biden, but they can't do it by phrasing him as compassionate, because simply put, he's not that. He has never been that, and he will never be that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how are you? It's like, the thing is, like, it's hard to bash Biden on policy when you don't have any policy, right? It's hard to bash someone that's a better person than you. It's easy to bash Hillary Clinton. I mean, I can take shots at Hillary Clinton, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, anyone can take shots at Hillary Clinton. It's Hillary Clinton. Yeah, you know, and that's with all respect to her. You can say whatever you want about her, but at the end of the day, there's a counterargument to it. She's a powerful woman. She got cheated on. Right. At the end of the day, there's always a counter argument and there's something that you can say. But when you're blowback, ironic. When your comeback to I don't know if you understood that, but I'll just keep going. When your comeback to. Oh, God, there's no good way to phrase this. When your response. There you go. When your response to Joe Biden doing something good is your son's dead, haha, and there's 180,000 Americans that are dead right now, it just, like, what are you going to say? Sure, I think that you can attack him on his past votings, but the president isn't doing that. The president isn't attacking him on how many African Americans he's put in jail, because Joe Biden has put a lot of African Americans in jail. He actually signed, or he voted on, you know, a police reform that, frankly, destroyed a lot of families. You know, he did vote for the war in Iraq, correct?
Yeah, I believe he did.
And
but then again, saying Trump supported the Iraq war as well, but
yeah,
that's beyond the point.
Yeah, but I mean, at that point, I believe that Trump could lie and say, oh no, I didn't, or whatever.
Oh, he has.
Yeah.
Oh, he has.
Exactly.
So we'll bring it up on the last podcast. Will said, oh, Joe Biden supported Iraq, Trump didn't support Iraq. I pulled him back and I said, Will, Trump has supported Iraq. He was a fervent supporter of Iraq. But as soon as he entered the public sphere as a candidate, he said, no, I haven't.
Yeah, well, hindsight's easy, right?
Hindsight's very easy.
It's easy to go back
especially,
and say no.
Especially when your supporters are ignorant to the real facts, but that's beyond the point.
Yeah, I think that... I wanted to say this. I wanted to say this about Bo Biden. I feel like it's not a conversation whether he was an American hero or not, right? Again, you can say what you want about his father and his policies. And his politics, that is. Frankly, you can't say a lot about Joe Biden's character because I think that he has a good character, and I think that no one can attest or say that he doesn't. I think that the most that I've seen is like the pedophile jokes, which have no validity, and the president has like, that's the thing, right? For every bad thing, there's more good for Joe Biden, right? If you're gonna say, oh, Joe Biden's a pedophile, yeah. It's like, oh, well, here's a picture of Donald Trump with Jeffrey Epstein and multiple pictures of him, and then here's him wishing what was her name, whatever, Jeffrey Epstein's girlfriend. Yeah, best wishes or whatever.
Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah, the best wishes. So it's like, okay, well, there goes your argument, right? When you weigh the two people against each other, it's just Joe Biden kind of wins every time. But I go to say this. There's no conversation to be had about Bo Biden being a hero. He went to war. And there's no politics. There's no politics when you're the one with the gun in Afghanistan, right? There can be politics behind it, but they're your brothers. They're, you know, your soldiers fighting together to preserve the Union, right? To preserve the beautiful country that we have. So I don't want to hear any rhetoric towards Bo Biden saying that he wasn't a hero because, frankly, he's more of a hero than a lot of us are. And he's a lot braver than many of us will ever be. So, you know, with that out of the way, I think that a crazy analogy that I heard is, you know, the reason that the boats sank in Dallas was because there was big boats making waves. Did you know that? The reason that the little...
I had no idea.
The reason that the little boats sank was because there was big boats making waves. And someone told me a crazy analogy. It's like, isn't that kind of ironic that the people, you know, I hate to bring race into it, but they said the white rich people with the big expensive boats sank the poor ones. And it's really representative of, I think, what's happening here. You know, you brought up the fact of why would you, what's in it for you? And I could see what's in it for Jeff Bezos in voting for Trump. I could see it. I could see what's in it for Mark Zuckerberg voting for Trump. Hell, I could see what's in it for Elon Musk voting for Trump. But I can't see what's in it for a middle-class family, right? I can't see what's in it for a minority family. And I think that that's the reason that at the end of the day, we see, you know, Biden winning by such a substantial margin. And I want to have your opinion on this. I think that these boat rallies, I was talking to a friend about it. And it's like, how does it feel, right, being a Trump supporter and not being able to go to one of his rallies because you don't have the flexibility in your income to be able to buy a boat? Isn't that like, it's such a bougie like rally? You know, do you get what I'm saying? Like, that's such like the opposite of a common man rally.
I do.
It's the opposite of going and talking to hardworking Americans. You're not speaking in factories. So I feel like these boat rallies are kind of counterintuitive in a sense, if you understand what I'm saying. I feel like they're extremely counterintuitive because if anything, I feel like they would anger me, right? They would anger me if I couldn't afford this or that. I'd be like, hell, why can they afford it?
You make a good point. But at the end of the day, Trump's not creating these boat rallies. These are the people. So you have to consider that these aren't Trump mandated, Trump proposed boat rallies. It's more people banding together to support Trump. So I think that the point is there, but it's more of Trump has his own rallies.
You know, I get you 1,000%.
He has his own, but I get it. It shows the kind of people, especially the Texas incident, Dallas incident. It shows the kind of people and the kind of slate that the Trump campaign is going towards right now. The fact that we have big fish, little fish, and the big fish are drowning out the opinions of those who are smaller than them. And that's the kind of state we are in America right now. The wealthy are drowning out the opinions and just the validity in the words of working class Americans. And I think when you said, what's in it for you? I brought me back to the point that the statement Trump made, allegedly made towards soldiers, one of them who died, who passed away in uniform.
What was in it for
them? He said, what was in it for them? Right. And that's exactly, it's very similar to what you said before. And it brought me back to that point. What was in it for them? Well, really, it's preserving, as I said, peace and freedom in our country. It's preserving American values, and it's preserving what we have to live for in our nation. And the fact of the matter is that soldiers are really not fighting for as much as they fought for in past administrations. And I'm strong on that point. It may be controversial, but I think in today's scape, schooled soldiers are not coming back to an America that supports every American, regardless of their ethnicity, their race, their culture. They're coming back to an America that discriminates, an America that doesn't support the working class American. And I think that is completely demeaning of what they're doing in foreign nations, risking their lives. We have Americans risking their lives for today's America. An America where police kill unarmed protesters, police kill unarmed Black people for simply reaching into their cars, shoot them 7 times. That's the kind of America that these Americans are fighting for. And I don't want, that's a disrespect to our soldiers, in my opinion. I think by having a political landscape like this, we are disrespecting the sacrifices and the promises of our soldiers towards this nation.
Yeah, yeah. And you want to know something? I agree with you 1,000%, but something that upset me and it brought me this came up in my mind when you mentioned the police officers shooting unarmed protesters. Someone said, this is wrong on many points, but someone said, oh, thanks, LeBron James just ruined his legacy. What do they think that they're doing by sitting out one game? First of all, LeBron wasn't the one that started it. The Bucks did it, if I'm not mistaken. The Bucks actually sat out first. It wasn't a LeBron movement. But I guess LeBron's the face of the NBA, so if you want to be ignorant towards it, you can just blame it on one person. And then same people that get mad when you blame, they're like, oh, you can't blame Trump for all your problems. But either way, right? So they get mad if they sit out. Or let's phrase it like this. They get mad if they do not participate in a game, right? And then they get mad if before the game they kneel for the national anthem, and then they get mad if they peacefully protest, and then they get mad if they riot. So what the hell are you supposed to do, right? Are you just supposed to shut up and be complicit? Unless you're a priest, right? Because the president said priests are entitled to speak about their political views. But it's really weird because the priest that Donald Trump was talking about had political views that affiliated with his values and kind of supported him. And this priest had also said that Donald Trump, you know, is God-given or he's divine or this or that. So it's really weird to think that when a basketball player does it, it's shut up and dribble. But when a religious figure does it, it's preach, Father, preach.
Well, you have to consider Black people, basketball players, they're all Americans with their own opinions. LeBron James is an American with his own opinion, and he has every right to speak his mind, to protest peacefully. He has every right. And I think that you mentioned, shut up and listen, they're saying shut up and dribble. Well, why? Why does he have to? Because really, at this point, it's not just the lives of his friends, his peers, and his neighbors. It's his own life. Because if you've been following the NBA so far, you've seen that NBA players, regardless of their socioeconomic status, have been discriminated against and subject to instances of police brutality. It doesn't follow your economic status or celebrity status. It really does discriminate on any line. You're never safe from police brutality based upon your race. And I think that is why so many NBA players, LeBron included, have been protesting, because it affects them. Even though so many Americans say no, You're shielded from these issues because you have a lot of money. You're a celebrity and people know who you are. No, it does not. It really doesn't. Because the simple fact of the matter, the LeBron James skin is a couple of shades darker than some other Americans, can cost him his life. And that's why LeBron James sits down. That's why NBA players decide not to play, because it's bigger than the game. They're using their voices. I don't know if you've heard, Damian, but they use their voices after they protested. The whole reason for why they sat is because they wanted the NBA to adopt new measures to advocate for an end to police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted the NBA to donate money towards this effort. And that's really why they protested. It's not symbolic. It, in a sense, yeah, it's symbolic, but
yeah,
it's not completely symbolic.
Yeah, yeah.
At this point, it's more about really inspiring action, because as Dr. Lester said a long time ago on our podcast, we have to make the shift from awareness to action. And that's what LeBron James, that's what NBA players did. I don't know if you heard about the two NBA teams that said, I don't want to play the rest of the season, were the Lakers, LeBron James' Lakers, and the Clippers. The two leading teams in the NBA didn't want to continue the NBA season because the social issues at hand are far more important to them. They're the two teams with a shot at a national championship. And ironically, they didn't want to continue because of the issues in our nation. It goes to show that even them, they're making a big sacrifice. But really, the sacrifice undermines how much of a sacrifice that American people are making in really going out every single day.
Well, yeah.
Because black Americans, let me finish this point. Black Americans go out every single day working everyday jobs, essential workers. They risk their lives to COVID-19. They risk their lives to police brutality, and they risk their lives to racism. And we can't stand for that. We cannot.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that pisses me off, right, is that people get pissed off at it doesn't matter what you do. And that's the thing, right? It's like, what do you want me to do? How do you want me to protest?
Yeah.
How do you want me to voice my opinion? You want me to vote? Then stop gentrifying. Why do you gentrify if you want me to vote? You don't want me to protest? Then pass legislation that represents me. You don't want me to riot? Then listen to my protest. Bring me to the table. You don't want me to miss a game? Well, then do the things that I previously mentioned, right? And the crazy thing is that, you know, they said, what do they think they're going to get out of the game? They got out of a lot. You're talking about it. You're talking about the fact that he sat out a game. Got what they wanted. They brought, you know, it's the same kind of idea behind a protest. I think that's why a lot of these protests are failing in the respect that they're not bringing proper legislation or actual legislation. And the reason being is that the point of a protest is to put leaders on a table that represent you. And what I mean by this is that you know, if I'm protesting against a federal policy that does not represent me, it's because I want to be sat down next to whoever made the federal policy and be drawn to a actual policy that represents or that properly incorporates my values or the American values.
Mm-hmm.
So when you protest by not sitting down at an NBA game, what you do is the owners go, holy crap, I just lost like a couple million dollars because you chose not to play. And if I don't talk to you and hear what you want, I'm going to lose a couple more million. And a lot of those, you know, if you want to get someone on the table, hit them in their pockets. And that's what they did. So they brought them to the table. You know, that's the true point behind a protest. We're trying to organize something here. I don't want to get too much into it, but we're trying to organize something here. And the first thing that we said when we're organizing, you know, our call to action is, if the legislators or the people that make the laws here want to hear us out, right? If we send them an email and say, hey, we have a proposal for you, or if we call them and say, we have a proposal for you, can you sit down and listen to us? Or else this is going to turn into a protest. And they go, yeah, we'll sit down and listen to you. We'll sit down and talk to you. We'll sit down and actually do what you want us to do. Then there's no point in having a protest, right? Because the point of the protest is to get things done. And if you can get things done without it, then why protest? If you can't get things done by not protesting and by being peaceful and just sending them an email or whatever, then you protest. But it's gotten to the point where even the protests aren't doing anything. So they turn into riots. They're losing their patience. And I ask that Americans be patient. I ask that Americans it's so difficult, right? It's so difficult to ask right now in the state of this union, for Americans to be patient. But I ask for them to be patient. I ask for them to have compassion with one another. I ask for everyone's voice to be heard. What is happening in the streets, it's uncalled for, and it does not represent the values of, I think, past civil rights movements. And I think that in doing so, it is hurting us, our, you know, our chances as Americans, and I speak as a minority, to get things done. I understand the difficulty in maintaining the moral high ground. But if we do not maintain it, then we snoop down to the level of those who, you know, enact legislation that provokes police brutality. If we snoop down to the level morally of these people, then how can we bring them to the table? Right? It's a difficult situation. But I'm tired of hearing the word unprecedented. I want to hear empathy. I want to hear sympathy. I want to hear together. Because frankly, despite what you say or despite what your views might be, you know, I wasn't mad at anyone for partaking in the boat, you know, the boat rallies. What upset me was afterwards, I made a post. It was like, hey, can anyone tell me why they support the presidential candidate that they do? I think that that is probably the most like centrist, nonpartisan post that anyone could make. Not why do you support Donald Trump? Not why is Donald Trump, why do you dumbasses support Donald Trump? Or why do you X whatever, right? Or not why do you dumbasses support Biden? Or this or that. It was just, why do you support the presidential candidate that you do? And someone responded, because I have the right to. And it annoyed me because I'm not trying to get under your skin, right? It annoyed me because you got so defensive when I'm truly trying to understand you as a person. And it's gotten to the point where we've stopped trying to see each other as people and we've only seen each other as political rivals. You can feel the tension. I don't know if you can relate to this, but the tension fills the room when someone brings up the word masks or someone says the president. Everyone's like, oh my God, where's this conversation going to go? Everyone just looks at each other. It's kind of like, oh no, right? I think that we just need to engage in conversations that are uncomfortable, more so now than ever. And I love talking to people that support the president. I don't. I condone all his actions. I always get condone and condemn mixed up. I think I used it right. condemn is to support. Condone is to not. But right. I condone.
No, condemn is to. They're both the same.
Condone
is the one to support. Actually,
listen. I don't like the president.
Condone is to accept. You're right. All right, I got you.
Okay,
I got you.
Okay. Cool. Either way, I don't support the president. But I don't mind listening to why people do. You can not support the LGBTQ community, but well, this is a whole nother discussion because I don't think that you should be inclined to support anything if you don't agree with it. But I think that opposing is different than not supporting, if you understand what I'm saying. I feel like a lot of people are getting that mixed up. I think that the LGBTQ community it has hurt themselves. And, you know, I can speak from an outside third party perspective by saying that if you don't support them, then you are against them. And I don't think that that's the case. I think that there are certain circumstances, I think that 1000%, Varun, there are certain circumstances where silence is complicity, but silence is only complicity when you see someone doing something wrong, if you understand what I'm saying. You can be silent towards a positive issue, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, right? Just because you don't support the LGBTQ community doesn't mean that you're necessarily against them. Just because you don't support Black Lives Matter doesn't necessarily mean that you're against them. I think that it's gotten to a point where if you see, you know, a homophobic remark, that even if you don't support the LGBTQ community, you should say something because it's not just about the community. It's just about supporting each other as people. And if you don't support Black Lives Matter and you see a racist remark, you should still say something because that's a person at the end of the day. They're not just a movement. And that's the issue. We've all gotten entrapped in political movements and political ideas and political enemies and rivalries and it's unfortunate, but I think that we're going to get out of it. I have faith in the country.
Yeah, I think you make a lot of great points. But I think that if you don't support something, you have to be willing to stand up for empathy and for the good fight. Because I think that if you see an LGBTQIA person and you don't, I don't know how you can not support somebody and still stand up for them. I don't understand that. I don't know if I ever will. Because if I'm against the LGBTQIA community, I would never support them if they were slandered or if they were just points were brought up against them. I think you have to. You may not understand them. You may not. I think that's where I can agree with you. You may not understand the causes behind who they are, the kind of people that they are, but sometimes you have to accept without understanding. And I think that is where what you're saying, in my opinion, draws the line. But I think that anybody has to support the LGBTQIA peers because at the end of the day, they're also humans. I mean, if you're not supporting them, does it say you're not supporting your fellow Americans, your fellow people, your fellow humans? I mean, I don't differentiate based upon somebody's sexuality. I don't. I cannot. I may not understand it, but I cannot differentiate based upon that.
Sophia, I'm recording.
Supporting them. And I think that you have to support them whenever they're slandered and talked against. But once again, I want to end here. A lot of things I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about high schools, football, reopening, all that kind of stuff. But we can mention that on the next podcast here with Plotatine. I think we're going to have another solo episode with me and you, Damien. But
yeah,
to end
Wednesday.
Here today, yeah, this Wednesday. But to end here today, I wanted to mention something. Doc Rivers said at a press conference for the NBA, he said, "We keep loving this country, and this country doesn't love us back." And it hit a strong tone in my heart because he broke into tears after saying that because he meant it. He meant it. This country does not love certain people. The only way past this hump is yes, electing Biden is a step towards a better future. But we have to be empathetic. We have to inspire empathy, and we have to promote empathy in every single American, regardless of their race, their ethnicity, their sexuality. We have to promote empathy towards every American, and that begins with Biden, but doesn't end with Biden. We have to become better people, a better nation, and truly be patriots in the cause of making America what it can and what it should be, a place of acceptance for everybody, regardless of, again, race, sexuality, origin.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if it begins. I think that it can begin with Biden, but I think that that can be torn if there isn't a transition of power that's peaceful, a peaceful transition of power. I think that my final victory, my hoorah, the moment where everything will calm down is when we see President Trump shake Joe Biden. I mean, even thinking about it, right, gives you like a little, like a little sigh of relief. Like, okay, we're gonna be okay. When we see President Trump shake Vice President Joe Biden's hand, whether it's in you know, in defeat or whether it's victory, I think that once we have that moment where we can see that at the end of the day we're humans, I think that that's going to be a good thing. I think that the president can't show that, and I think that that's the problem. I don't think that the president will ever shake Joe Biden's hand, which I think is an issue. But that's beyond the point. That's neither here nor there. I think that today was an amazing conversation, Varun, and I'm happy to be talking to you again. I'm happy to get the podcast back on track, and I'm happy to have our listeners, you know, here joining us for another amazing episode of Plotatine. As I said at the beginning, stay tuned for this Friday at 7 p.m. For our next episode with a little schedule change. You know, give us some feedback at Plotatine Show on Twitter. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/PlotatinePodcast. And as always, be sure to go out and have a conversation about anything that you're passionate about, invoking conversations and having conversations about ideas that pertain to you, whether it be with your, you know, with strangers, with your family, at dinner, you know, at work, at school. Be sure to be having conversations, to never stop learning, because that's the only way that we're going to really succeed as a country in the future. Americans, we will get through this, And for those abroad, stop laughing at us. We're going to get through this. We'll be here. We'll be there. We'll be back eventually. But with that being said, I want to thank everybody for tuning into today's episode. I want to thank my amazing co-host, Varun, for joining me and having an amazing discussion with me. And as always, have a wonderful rest of your day.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Politician Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/Politician Podcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/Politician Podcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/Politician Podcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.politicianpodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Politician. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.